Well, there's a tendency these days with all the gloom and doom in the world to shut down or to not respond because it's just all so overwhelming. But there are ways to get involved, and Mary Pfeiffer, the best-selling author of Reviving Ophelia, has written a new book about her own battle against forces that seem too big to fight. In this case, she's talking about the fight to halt the Keystone Pipeline from coming across the Midwest and through her native Nebraska. Her new book is The Green Boat, of Reviving Ourselves in a Capsized Culture. And Mary Pfeiffer, so good to have you back here. Welcome
back.
Thank
you, Steve. It's good to be back.
You started out as an author writing books such as Reviving Ophelia and The Shelter of Each Other, which focused on adolescents and families, very different topics. What got you going on environmental issues?
Well, you know, I've always liked to write about what I was most curious about.
Mm-hmm.
And in our culture, a couple years ago, what I noticed was an enormous disconnect between the scientific information we had about global climate change and our individual and cultural responses to it. And in fact, as a psychologist, I would almost say that there was a taboo about speaking about these issues. I don't know if this ever happened to you, but if I would bring up global climate change with someone else or at a party, I would just immediately feel I had broken a taboo and was being censored.
Because you're opening up, it's too heavy. You're dropping a bomb on the conversation.
Debbie Downer, mm-hmm. or let's not go there, kind of response. But as a therapist, I also know that those issues people don't talk about are really important, and they always hide some kind of dysfunctionality. So I wanted to look at how could we change the conversation and what was happening to us as people that made it so very difficult to face these issues.
How do we change the conversation then? What's the answer?
Well, first of all, having been a mom and a therapist, one thing I know very well is shouting, wake up, doesn't work. Shouting, wake up, doesn't work. Also, of course, it doesn't work to shame or scold or make people feel guilty. And likewise, information is not just enough. So it's very tricky. And in fact, everybody's been trying to figure out this question of how do we engage our world in a very serious conversation. It's a very difficult, tricky question. But what I argue in the book is we don't have to be conscious of these issues all the time. But we have to be awake and aware of them enough that we can some of the time act in our best interest. Now, the particular way that worked best for me was after a particularly despairing time, I decided to have a couple friends over and start a group. And action has always been my antidote to despair. And facing the issues with friends, making a plan with friends, carrying out that plan with friends, ended up being a very good tonic for me.
Well, what were the issues that you dealt with your friends, and what action steps did you decide to take?
Well, first of all, two or three of us met in my living room, and we decided we were going to make these meetings fun. We always had a bottle of wine. We always had a potluck, good
Very
food.
Good idea.
We didn't meet in offices. We met in private homes and parks. And the issue that was the biggest in our state at that time was it looked very certain that President Obama would approve a permit for the Keystone XL pipeline, which would go over the Ogallala Aquifer and our sandhills. Very fragile ecosystem.
And the Ogallala is out in western Kansas and many other states, too. A huge source of our drinking water
throughout
the Midwest.
It's a great underground lake that covers, well, it supplies about 30% of the drinking water and agricultural water in the country. So we start just kicking around, well, what could we do about that? A few people in a living room in Lincoln. But the next meeting, we had three times as many people. And we always planned an action. We didn't sit around going, woe is me. We'd share information about what's going on, what we know, what's happening in politics and so on. But then we'd always plan an event. And almost all of our events were fun. We had bar benefits. Our latest action is I'm formed a little group called the Apple Pie Brigade, and we give apple pies to politicians and other positive leaders in this fight against the Keystone XL.
You didn't bring one to your talk show host today.
You know,
I just
that
noticed.
Would have been a really good idea.
I'm a little
idea.
Hurt.
That
yeah.
would have been a good idea.
Yeah.
And now we're organizing an initiative, the Grandmother's Apple Pie Brigade, where we're going to have people all over America rocking for a sustainable future, bringing their portable rocking chairs to their town square or in front of their library or their federal building,
yeah.
and having rocking and baking for the future. So we try to come up with things that are fun, that people want to be involved with. And we also do not go away. We have been fighting this pipeline now for 3 years, and we almost always have action planned every month.
Where does your fight against the pipeline stand right now?
Well, it's out of Nebraska's hands right now. It's in President Obama's hands, and he's expected to make a decision in October.
He's been putting this off, I've noticed.
Well, he's the first, in fairness to Obama, when he vetoed the Keystone XL pipeline, it's the first time that's ever happened in the history of the country. Nobody knows right now what he will decide. And believe me, people are trying to find out. Nobody knows. But one thing I want to say about that is whatever President Obama decides, we will keep acting. For example, if he decides to deny the permit, we're going to take him an apple pie. We're going to hand deliver it to him. If he decides to veto the permit, we're going to keep fighting. We're not going to – the fight will not be over till we give up, and we're not going to give up.
Mary, just bring our listeners up to speed on what the options are that are in front of him. What might he do? How might this impact – this will go through Nebraska potentially and through Kansas, I think, too. Remind us where we are with this.
All right. Well, the Keystone XL pipeline begins in Alberta.
Way up in
Canada,
right.
With the tar sands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a pipeline that ships its tar sand sludge to the Gulf of Mexico for export. Now, this goes across almost every major river system in our country. The existing pipeline that's been built to ship this tar sands sludge, the Enbridge pipeline, has about a spill a month. So it's very, very tricky to ship this particular product through the pipeline.
That's a long pipe, Mary.
Also, we don't know what's in the pipeline. It's proprietary knowledge. We have some suspicions, some pretty toxic materials are in it, but we don't know what they are because that knowledge is secret.
Why would that be secret if it's coming across the country, the breadth of the country here?
Well, one of the things we have learned is if you want to see how the world really works, try to change it. And especially if you take on the fossil fuel industry, you really get so many interesting lessons in how the world works. And one of those lessons is proprietary information, that many, many companies have the right to keep secret what's in their product because of patents and so on and so on.
That's amazing to me.
I know.
Just amazing.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just really struck by your response to this, and in particular, one aspect of your response to this, which is you wanted to have made sure you have fun in the process of doing this, not to make too much of it, but you said you wanted to have glasses of wine at these meetings. That just strikes me as such a smart thing to do, only because so many times meetings like these are so earnest and so serious and so heavy that people are just absolutely turned off by the whole thing.
That's right. And that's what we're talking about here is how do you deal with resistance? Everybody's busy. Everybody's got enough on their plates.
Yeah. Yeah.
You go to one dull meeting in an office and listen
done.
To somebody go on with facts, you're never coming back. The answer to would you join a group or not depends on what kind of group is it? Is it with your friends? Do you always have a lot of fun? Do you really enjoy what you're doing? Do you enjoy the planning? Does it end up being a real positive experience? If the answers to those questions are yes, you can keep a group together.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mary Pfeiffer is our guest. She's a national treasure. She's the author of Reviving Ophelia. Her latest book is The Green Boat, Reviving Ourselves in Our Capsized Culture. She appears at 7 this evening at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Call Rainy Day Books in Fairway at 913-384-3126 for tickets and more information. And you've been here any number of times over the years. Always nice to have you back here.
Thank you very
Mary.
Much.
Our number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. How to get involved, how to get involved and help yourself deal with some of these big, ominous, heavy problems that we all face is a subject and the theme of Mary's new book. Let's go to Mike from Lawrence. So Mike, you're on UpToDate with Mary Pfeiffer. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. All the way from the Chippewan and Cree in Alberta, clear through the three tribes in North Dakota, the Lakota, the Ho-Chunk, the Omaha, and the Iowa, and the Sac and Fox, and the tribes down in Oklahoma. Tribes are at ground zero for this exploitation of natural resources, and Stephen Harper in Canada is pushing it. And First Nations and fellow activists are yelling out loud, and it seems like money means more, but I appreciate what she's doing. But it's a huge fight. I just have a feeling, even after watching Gaslamp Part 2 the other night, that even I'm a Democrat, even some of the Democrats are waffling for the money, and it kind of worries me. It makes me feel, as all activists, I don't mean to kind of dampen what she did, the positivity that she has this morning, but you almost feel like you're fighting it on your own sometimes.
Mike, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in. First of all, I want to say something about that hopeless feeling you have, because we've all had that hopeless feeling. We've all had the feeling that we're powerless, that there's nothing we can do. And one of the things I've learned writing this book and being involved in a very active process for 3 years with other people is that belief that you're powerless becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And on the other hand, if you start acting as if you might have power, and you can find a group of people who agree to act that way with you,
that's interesting.
It's pretty amazing how quickly things can happen. You know, it's always in the interest of power to tell you that you're powerless. But one of the things that's been really amazing about our group is to actually realize we've had a lot of power. We've stopped that pipeline for almost 3 years now, and we may stop it entirely. And again, we started out 8 people in a living room. So there is actually something to be said for acting as if you have power. The other thing is, I don't make an argument that activism will lead to a sustainable planet. I wish I could make that argument, but nobody knows. Nobody really knows what will happen. What I make is a mental health argument, that if you join with other people and act, you will feel better. And I just want to refer to the Native peoples involved in this pipeline fight. Idle No More is very involved. The tribes in Nebraska are very involved. When we had State Department hearings in Nebraska about this pipeline in April, we were the only state in the country that got a hearing. And it's because we've caused so much trouble in our state. Hmm. Native people from all over the country came to testify and sing at that hearing. And so I think the Native people are very involved. The best thing about this particular environmental problem is it gives us 3,000 miles of opportunity for community organizing.
Meaning
all along the route. It crosses farms, it crosses rivers, it crosses a great deal of Native land. And so there's plenty of people that are very personally invested in not having this pipeline built.
That means opportunity for you and your group.
One of the most interesting things about our coalition in Nebraska is I'm kind of an urban progressive. You know, I'm kind of in the academic community in Lincoln where I live. Our first allies were the ranchers and farmers because they understand water and they understood the land. So at the same time we're having poetry readings, we're having tractor brigades, and we end up making friends with each other. We have a very polarized state. But we all ended up being part of the same beloved community.
And there's something liberating, I sense, from what you're describing, that this problem, which seems so oppressive, suddenly doesn't seem so oppressive any longer.
Well, one of the things we really figured out is polarizing and politicizing conversation around these issues goes nowhere. What really works is to appeal to the deepest common ground. And this is another thing about the Keystone XL. There's really nothing more basic for human beings than potable water, drinking water. So it's easy to appeal to people. Do you want to drink clean water? Most people are likely to say yes to that.
Yeah. Steve Everly from The Star had an interesting story in the paper today pointing out that if the pipeline is built, the Keystone pipeline is built, it would cause gas prices in the Kansas City area and the rest of the Midwest to spike, to rise by as much as 40 cents a gallon. This is according to a report released today by a consumer group. Interesting. Just the opposite of what you might expect. Gas prices would actually go up in the Midwest if the thing is built.
Absolutely. One of the big selling points that TransCanada has used to sell this pipeline is low gas prices. It's actually just the reverse. This pipeline is going to the Gulf of Mexico for export on the world market. It has nothing to do at all with American gas prices. The other thing they've talked about a great deal is jobs. And those jobs numbers move all over the place. But the fact of the matter is almost all those jobs are short-term, temporary jobs. And then we'll be left with a pipeline that could greatly affect the livelihoods of people in the Midwest.
Mary Pfeiffer is our guest. Her new book, The Green Boat, she speaks tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. You can call Rainy Day Books in Fairway for more info, 913-384-3126. John from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Good morning. Mary, thank you so much for what you're doing. I've been part of the Keystone XL fight myself. I wanted to find out if you are aware, I know many of the listeners won't be aware, that the Enbridge Corporation you mentioned has a plan in mind to build a new pipeline connecting some existing pipelines to bring 600,000 plus barrels per day of this tar sands crud right across Missouri and Kansas through the southern part of our metro area. It's a pipeline that would run from Flanagan, Illinois, south of Chicago, to Cushing, Oklahoma. And it would cross the Missouri River, the Mississippi River, lots of other streams and creeks, too. And they're trying to get approval right now, fast-track approval to start building this thing in August.
You know, I'm so glad you called in, because I'll tell you what your remarks do, is they give every person listening to this show an opportunity to have some folks over to their living room and start talking about this Enbridge pipeline. You know, the way we are going to stop these kinds of monstrosities is by one person after another saying, I'm going to engage in a hopeful process based on the belief that if I do something, I gather some people together to do something, and we have fun doing it, we might just win. And so this particular Enbridge pipeline coming this way, I would be so happy. You tell me later, Steve, if you hear about this. But if John's remarks inspire 10 or 15 people to get a little group started, that is a lot. We didn't have that many people when we started fighting in Nebraska.
Make sure you bring some wine, John.
Right.
Good luck. Yeah.
Better than mine.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, you do get a sense, and again, you're talking to a guy who's covered politics for way too much of my career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so much of this notion of activism in some ways, it seems to me, almost has taken on negative connotations over the years. It's not cool to be so heavily engaged and involved in one focus, because that's sort of seen as not cool somehow. I'm not sure why that is in a government that was set up to be of the people, for the people, and all those kinds of things. We really have turned away from that somehow.
Right. Well, activists are always worshipped after they're dead and after the causes. I mean, Martin Luther King was an activist.
Yeah.
He's a great hero now. He wasn't a great hero at the time, to many people,
That's right. At least.
You know, this is a very disengaged country. I just saw a Pew poll. 70% of Americans report being deeply disengaged with their work. We also have far more people who do not, in quotes, believe in, what a strange way to talk about it, climate change, than any other country in the world. And I think they both reflect the same thing, disengagement and compartmentalization.
Yeah.
On the other hand, the positive way to say this is if you decide to act as if you have hope, if you find some friends, and everyone can be an activist in this sense. I always encourage people, do what you love. If you're passionate about baking apple pies, if you're passionate about playing guitar, if you're passionate about urban gardens,
yeah,
there's always something very near your home that you can get involved with. It's going to not only make the world a better place, but also make you feel vibrant and authentic and flourishing in a way it's very hard to be if you're a passive recipient of whatever comes next.
And Mary, just a quick question as we wind up here from a listener. If we don't use pipelines to ship, you know, tar sand oil, how will it be transported?
Well, I'm hoping they never take that tar sand out of the ground because, as James Hansen, NASA scientist, said, game over. You know, we have enough infrastructure in the world around fossil fuels that if we develop everything that's already on plan, we'll so far exceed CO2 levels. So I would like to stop the Keystone XL altogether, and I would like to shut down the tar sands eventually.
We're going to leave our conversation right there. Again, you can hear and see Mary Pfeiffer tonight at 7 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Rainy Day Books and Fairways, your place to go to get a ticket, 913-384-3126. Mary, it's always good to have you here.
You
Thanks
know, I like
by.
Being on the show. Thank you.
I'm glad. Thanks, Mary. Her new book, again, The Green Boat, Reviving Ourselves in Our Capsized Culture. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Caitlin Brennan, and Sangeeta Shastri. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.